Let's call the meeting to government operations to order. We have a quorum. Do we have minutes?
I have to take my glasses off, Mr. Chairman.
We don't have our minutes from last night's meeting. We'll take care of them tomorrow. Representative Dill, we have your bill 2582 in front of us, and I'd like to borrow your glasses after last night.
I tried to use them in here, but I feel like I should be on a red carpet, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 2582. This is a game and fish bill. This is the bill that we usually have every year, sometimes controversial, sometimes not. Mr. Meyer is here to explain the bill and the items that are relative to government operations, which there are a few in the bill.
Mr. Chairman,
and one second, Mr. Meyer. Members, I have a memo. I think everyone's got a memo in your packet. This bill here, if we can limit our testimony, our questions, sections 10, sections 39, 53, 54, and 55 are what are pertinent to our committee. And I know we don't always aren't the best at keeping on track, but that's what's pertinent to our committee. Representative.
And my motion, Mr. Chairman, I believe this is to go to Environment Finance.
That's what we have. Thank you.
Okay, and so to Section 10, I'm going to have Mr. Meyer go through these and then answer questions when they...
Mr. Meyer, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the record. Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. And Section 10 on page... actually, I think looking at the first engrossment, which we're working off of, right, is on the bottom of page 3 here. Snowmobile operation during the firearm season. This language is to conform the bill. Basically, snowmobiles and ATVs, we're trying to conform the use of snowmobiles during the hunting season, the deer firearms and rifle hunting season. Right now, it's against the law to operate an ATV during certain times of the day. And given this winter we've had, we think maybe we should conform snowmobile use to the same thing. We also have discussed the issue of use in a grant and aid trail. That would conflict with some of this language, so we're going to make sure that that does not happen. So a person with a deer hunting license would be able to ride on a snowmobile grant and aid trail system after December 1st. The next section of the bill,
Mr. Meyer, it's been a lot of years since but there have been years when I've been out deer hunting and we've had snow on the ground, and yes.
The next section of the bill that's actually on your sheet, that first one wasn't on the sheet, but I wanted to bring that to your attention. The Citizens Oversight Committee, beginning on page 5 of the bill, we're trying to clarify that the committee, they don't receive per diem. Basically, these folks, we'll give them mileage and a dinner, but we want to make sure that they aren't receiving per diem, so we're striking that 15059 subdivision 5 language there. The Budget Oversight Committee, you can see the language on the top of page 6, says committee members must not receive daily compensation for oversight activities, so we're just clarifying that. The next section here is on page 39 of the bill.
Section 39, page 20.
I'm sorry, thank you.
It's early.
And what we're clarifying here is that the commissioner by rule has the ability to set limits, restrictions for taking and possessing small game. And what we're doing here, as we went through our kind of review of all the DNR statutes and game and fish laws, as I think everybody knows, are pretty complicated in statute. We're codifying the small game seasons to make them easier to understand and simpler to read. So the language here that actually begins on the top of page 20, it says a commissioner may by rule set open seasons for prescribed limits and restrictions for small game as defined in 97A05. This isn't new authority. It's just clarifying that we have that authority. Again, we used to have this authority for each individual species. So you'll see language in the bill that I'm not going to get into that kind of codifies all the small game and then has definitions, a different section as well. The next section, section 53, is related to that. You'll see it's on page 25. It just says that we shall amend rules 6234.0500 by adding a new subpart to read a person may not take more than 5 gray partridge per day. This is a piece that was in the old small game statutes that we're just rearranging and making it more clear. The rulemaking, I should have said, actually the rulemaking for the snowmobiles that I referenced at the beginning is here on page 25, rulemaking snowmobile operation during firearm season. And You can see the language I referred to, adding a new subdivision on 25.27 to 28. A licensed deer hunter may operate a snowmobile on state and grand and aid trails during the deer season. So we did not want to prohibit somebody from doing that. The last one, Mr. Chairman, is on page 26. And this was language that was amended into the bill in the House Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee that would allow a person to use dogs to pursue rabbits or hares from April 16th to July 14th. We're still working on that April 16th date, but the concept is one that we overall support. Been working with some stakeholders and members of the House and Senate on that issue. So that would just bring us into conform rules to allow us to allow that to happen.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Any questions of the testifier or the author? Representative Pepe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dill. I noticed on page 8 and page 9, I think there's some discussion of a driver's license or Minnesota identification card requirement. On line 8.4, it says a driver's license or Minnesota identification card bearing the applicable designation serves as satisfactory evidence to obtain a license. And I'm just wondering then, you know, there's a lot of controversy over photo ID of all the, you know, the immense amount of difficulty it is for people to get, apparently, an ID. And I'm wondering, will the DNR provide free IDs for people? Or, you know, is the League of Women Voters okay with this since you're requiring a driver's license or an identification card? Which I didn't think was difficult to get, but you know, after the photo ID.
Representative Pepin, that is not a portion of the bill, as we said earlier. The memo that's in your packet are the portions of the bill that are pertain to us. I know we've been free, a little liberal on that in the past, but again, this is not part of us. The driver's license would be transportation, and the voter ID stuff would be dealing with election. But
Mr. Chair, will this bill then be going to elections?
There's nothing, Madam Chair, I don't, or Representative Pepin, I'm tired this morning. I don't know why, but I'm tired this morning. Representative Pepin, there's nothing in this bill that deals with voters voting, and even that section has nothing to deal with voters. That deals with driver's license.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you're not planning on sending this to elections after you just said it had to do with elections, can the author answer the question here, and then it won't have to go to elections?
Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Pepin. Right now, every single time that a 100% disabled veteran goes to get a hunting license or a fishing license, which is either applicable, which is free, they have to take their documentation in. This is a person who is 100% disabled, permanently disabled. They have to take their documentation into a small gas station or a fishing store or something that might be in your district and hand someone who has no idea what they're looking at. And the veteran would say, I'm 100% disabled, here's my paperwork, boom, out goes the license. What this does, in essence, is it allows for that designation at the request of the 100% disabled person to have it placed on their driver's license. This isn't a mandatory thing. This is something that they will make a request of the department, and their department will authenticate it and then allow that to be put on the driver's license at the request of the veteran to simplify things, to make it easier for them so that they walk in and show the card or swipe the card, boom, then it happens. It's a major simplification. It's all in Section 48. Most of the item is in Section 8 on page 23. And this has been through, one of the... Well, that's it. And this, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, this has been requested for years by 100% disabled veterans.
Representative Pepper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dill, I do notice that another section about a driver's license or an ID card being required. Is there any other evidence any other thing that would substitute as evidence to obtain a license?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pepin, right now in statute 97A, it's a requirement to present a Minnesota's driver's license or a Minnesota ID card to show proof of residency. So that's already in statute. That's been in law for quite some time. The intent of this is, it's a bill actually that Representative Dill is authoring, is to simplify this for this, these disabled veterans, and you'll see that language on page 23 would establish this type 1 through 5 documentation. The veteran would come to the DNR or send us verification of their paperwork. We would then notify DPS to put this endorsement, so to speak, on their driver's license, and then when they come to that agent, we would take their driver's license, just like you do when you buy a license, swipe the card, and the system would automatically pop up and say this person is eligible for a crossbow permit, a muzzleloader scope permit, a free deer license, whatever those opportunities are. You'll also see the language here does not go into effect until January 1st, 2016, or the date the new driver and vehicle services system is implemented. So we're working with DPS. The one thing we need to make sure is that that information is encoded on the magnetic strip, so that it will work with our licensing system. This is it's a leap into the 21st century for these types of licenses, and we're working with the author and Department of Public Safety to make sure that it works in a timely fashion.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Meyer. And then I would like to get to a section that I think is part of the our purview in this committee, Section 53 and 54. The gray partridge bag limit, and then the snowmobile operations during firearms deer season. And it looks like you have a good cause exemption for both of them, and I'm just wondering why we're going that route as opposed to going through the full rulemaking process.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, the good cause exemption relates to actually language within Section 39 on page 19 of the bill, and the recodification, as I stated, of the small game seasons. So the language we're striking on top of page 20, where it says gray and fox squirrels, cottontail and jackrabbit, snowshoe hare, raccoon, bobcat, red fox, gray fox, pine, fisher, marten, etc. We're simplifying that whole section of statute. The one piece we didn't have was this gray partridge that was actually in statute. So we're actually asking for this good cause exemption, which we're here every year for. And it'd be nice to come up with some language somewhere that stated that if we're just changing game and fish statute, we have the authority to update the rules as well. So that's what the good cause exemption here for gray partridges. And then the snowmobile piece, as we're defining it earlier in the bill, I believe it was Section 5 of the bill I talked about when we first started, this language would just give us the authority to update those rules as well on the snowmobiles that fits the statutory changes in the front of the bill. It's something we spend a lot of your time on, unfortunately, and maybe Mr. Shepard might be able to comment on this, but we have to come here every year for this good cause exemption because we're changing statute that impacts rule, and all we're asking here is the ability to, in a cost-effective, expeditious manner, update those rules in accordance with the statute that the legislature passes into law.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Meyer. And then, is your answer essentially the same for Section 55, the rulemaking for use of rabbits and hares to train dogs, which I don't know anything about, but I don't know if it's controversial or anything like that. Is that the same answer for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, yes, and except for that April 16th date, which I believe we can work out in the process, the rest of that language is agreed to by all stakeholders.
Thank you. And then I just have one final question, Mr. Chair.
Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dill and Mr. Meyer. Was there anything in the repealer that affects us here in GovOps that we need to look at?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meyer.
Representative Pepin. No, most of these, you can see the repealers on 3R, where we start with squirrels, rabbit, hare, raccoons, bobcats, fox, fisher, game birds, all of that we just talked about. Under that gray partridge, the new codification piece. A lot of these are related to our unsection activities that we've done, looking at all the DNR statutes. It was, in talking with leadership in both the House and Senate, it was decided that we would do the unsection repealers in the Game of Fish bill related to Game of Fish, rather than have different bills out there dealing with similar topics. So most of those are old, antiquated, unneeded statutes. Or they all are, I should say.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Anybody in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? If not, Representative Dill renews his motion that House File 2840 be placed or be re-referred to the Environment Finance Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. The motion passes. The bill is re-referred. Thank you, Representative Dill. As we're coming down for the next bill on our agenda is Representative Fritz's bill, House File 2840, and as she's coming down, members, we have a group here from the Greater Mankato. They are here participating in Capital Historic Sites and Voices of the People and your role in Minnesota government. And we'd like to welcome these people, the group from Mankato. And Representative Fritz, let me get my stuff together here.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'll move that House File 2840 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Representative Fritz, describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the opportunity to be before you in this committee again, and especially on this important piece of legislation for the district that I represent. And so thank you all. I'm here before you today because of my hospital. And I say my because we all feel like we own our hospitals in our districts. Our hospital's been there over 50 years. What this bill does is repeal language that was put in 1963 that prohibits the board of directors and the CEO of District 1 Hospital to sell our hospital or to even negotiate a deal to do that type of sale for our hospital. Our hospital has been tremendous, has given us tremendous service in our community for over 50 years. I just will give you two little bits of information current, and one is 8 weeks ago my husband had a heart attack, and he had what they called the widow maker. So I drove him into the emergency room, and the doctor and nurses were immediately there and cared for him and then sent him in 92 minutes to Abbott for his heart surgery or angioplasty. Then he returned home. And he is now in cardiac rehab there. He was not going to go because he's a good old stoic German man. He thought they saved him. He was fine. But he is in cardiac rehab three times a week. He's in excellent condition. I owe so much to that hospital. He loves the folks he's with. It's got great equipment. He's in excellent condition. My neighbor across the street is going to go into hospice. This is just two examples of what the hospital does. She has been going back and forth, driving in the storm, in the cold, and her husband driving her back for cancer treatment in Rochester. And she is now going into our cancer treatment area that is in the hospital. So we have those things available to us at this wonderful hospital, and we want to keep them. So I have with me right here the CEO, Steve Pribble, who could tell you a little bit of more technical pieces about the bill, and then we'll stand for questions if you have them. So thank you, members.
Mr. Pribble, welcome to our committee. Please give your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
As Representative Fritz said, Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Stephen Pribble, Chief Executive Officer of District 1 Hospital in Faribault. First, I do want to thank Representative Fritz for leadership, advocacy, and support. I'd also like to introduce and thank Kim Anderson, President of the Faribault Area Chamber, for taking time to be with us today. I believe the committee has a copy of the chamber resolution that was recently unanimously passed by their board in support of this bill. In addition to Kim, Dr. Richard Berge is vice chair of our District 1 Hospital Board of Directors and a longtime resident of Faribault. Simply stated, we are asking for your support in allowing the local hospital board to make decisions regarding how we provide ongoing local access to primary and specialty care services to include hospital-based services. The bill that Representative Fritz alluded to has specific language that stipulates we cannot at any time sell, lease, or otherwise transfer the management or operation of the hospital, and we're looking for that to be repealed. In today's challenging and changing healthcare environment, flexibility in the management, control, and operation of the hospital and working in a more integrated fashion will ensure local services long into the future. Our board, composed of nine community members, our chief of staff and myself, have done our homework. We have completed our analysis and confidently believe integration will solidify the future of healthcare in Faribault. I ask for your support and would be happy to answer any questions.
And before we go to questions, members, there's a delete all amendment in the packet. And so I'll move the DE2 amendment. And put the bill in the order that the author wants. All those in favor of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill's amended. So, members, questions of the testifier or the author? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Fritz, I applaud you for trying to find a way to be able to save a very critical service in your community. If this legislation doesn't pass, what's the future of the Rice County Hospital, or maybe don't have the exact name, but you did reference that it was the county hospital in Rice County.
Well, thank you.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative O'Driscoll. I think it would be very bleak, and it would either close or it would become another nursing home. I would turn it over to
Mr. Tribble.
Mr. Chair, Representative Driscoll, our analysis, our strategic planning process reviewed the landscape of healthcare, particularly in southern Minnesota, where just within 60 miles of us are probably 40 hospitals, two of which are 15 miles away. And what we've seen over the years is a certain amount of out-migration of patients choosing to go other places. And as a result of that, our volumes have dropped precipitously, such that we finished 2013 as the sixth year out of the last seven where we've suffered financial losses. So our board did diligent research and concluded that the path to surviving healthcare in that community is in fact to look to align ourselves with a larger partner. And in fact, we're in discussions with Allina Health.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. To either Representative Fritz or the testifier, do you have a comfort level that that there'll be a long-term assurance that that facility will be there after the acquisition to be able to meet the needs of the residents of the greater Faribault area in Rice County?
Mr. Chair, Representative Driscoll, in our planning process, we've looked at the range of options, and in our discussions with Allina Health, there's been a fair amount of assurances relative to investing in the community and the infrastructure of healthcare. So we're looking at this as a total package, if you will. So, yes, we see that as a path to furthering and advancing, adding to actually healthcare services in the community.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, because I'm very inclined to support this because you have found a way to be able to keep a critical service in your community. But I also want to have that you have assurances that the legislature might be able to help. Not that we're dictating how private businesses would run, but I would hate to see something where there is this merger and then all of a sudden in 18 months it's like, well, it just doesn't make sense for us to do this when there could have been other alternatives that we could have helped you explore. So with that, I'll just conclude my comments.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Members, any other questions? Representative Ruskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, I had heard that there will also be effectively repealed an existing tax with this. Could you confirm that?
Mr. Tribble.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ruskowski. We've done our research on this, our legal counsel has, and there's two elements that I will describe. One is in our enabling legislation, it talks about the tax levy authority specifically to raise funds for the operations of the hospital. So our legal counsel has advised us that if the operations of the hospital, in fact, are moved away from the district, there's no taxing authority, that by definition. That being said, in the language in the bill, as I understand it, there's some repealing language that, in fact, would take overt action to dissolve the district once all of the arrangements are completed, or all the sale arrangements are completed, and which then again the taxing authority would be dissolved as well.
Thank you, Music.
Representative Rakowski, we're lowering taxes for the people of Faribault.
This is the 84th bill that's come before this committee, Mr. Chair, the first one I've seen like that, so I appreciate it. We're actually going to get government out of the way. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Anybody in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? If not, I'll renew my motion that House File 2480, as amended, be placed on the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill
will
be referred.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, members. Appreciate it.
The next bill on our calendar is Representative Clark's bill, House File 3081. And members, we're going to try and get through our agenda this morning so we don't have to come back tonight, but if we do not get through it, we will be back here tonight after 6:30 or 50 minutes after the last caucus. And Representative Clark, if you can be concise, that would help us get through the bill and get to all the bills we have on our agenda.
Mr. Chairman, to be very concise, I'll just say I'm very proud to bring this bill before you from the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and the experts here will speak to it.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape. And again, if you can be concise and hopefully not repeat the same thing three times, that would be helpful to get the bill passed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Sia Her. I am the Executive Director over at the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and today I'm here to speak on behalf of House File 3081, which is a bill that's asking for dedicated funds to pursue research into an area that in a number of our immigrant communities has been ignored by the mainstream community for fear of intruding into the cultures of immigrant groups, or do not acknowledge by immigrant groups ourselves because of a fear of showing our dirty laundry in public. I am speaking of domestic abuse and neglect that may cross into human trafficking. This is a form of abuse and neglect that serves to create cultures of dependency. This bill is asking the legislature to mandate and provide funding for a study that will shed light and provide clarity on practices of domestic abuse that are supported by power differentials between husbands and wives, women and men, that make reporting in a community such as ours even more difficult for the abused individuals. In our largest Asian Pacific Minnesotan community, the Hmong, a different but growing and increasingly problematic situation is what we know as international abusive marriages. And this situation involves men who are generally 20 to 40 years the junior of the young women that they take on as wives, and generally these women come here from Southeast Asia. These men, the problem with these international abusive marriages is that these men often have no intention of supporting or having meaningful marriages with these young women. These abusive international marriages increase sexual and domestic violence as well as neglect and exploit children and women here in the United States and overseas. Sadly, there is a steady drumbeat of testimonies that speak to this latter phenomenon that's breaking up families in the Hmong American community. It is with a heavy heart that I bring this bill to your attention. This is indeed dirty laundry, and it does not make our communities look good. And yet domestic abuse is the actions of only a finite number of people. It is a series of actions that have been talked about, acknowledged, but then rarely acted on. Not by our communities, nor by mainstream communities. Part of the reason for the dearth of actions is really connected to fear of shame on our part and others, but I believe that the main reason that few actions have been taken is really related to the fact that there are no simple facts about this phenomenon in our community. And the purpose of this bill is to gather facts and provide clarity. This bill would empower DHS to contract with an appropriate research group to create interview teams, provide field researchers, and follow the stories where they go. It is my hope that in the next legislative session that we will be driven by facts. We will be making informed decisions that are driven by facts and not the sometimes unattributed testimonies. Let our communities recognize that living in the shadows and tacitly approving abusive relationships is not doing either the individuals or our communities any favor. And let us have a discussion about whether or not in the United States and here in the great state of Minnesota, the rule of law is what we will follow. Using tradition as a justification for abuse should not take precedence over the rule of law. Government, we believe, is a partner in keeping our communities healthy. Our council recommends that government be a more active and supportive partner in tackling this issue. This legislative mandate should empower both the victims and the silent witnesses who feel unable to break the cycles of abuse because of fear of retaliation, marginalization, and or any other internal community pressures. Sometimes, and I wholeheartedly believe that this time is one of those sometimes the power of government is the tipper between action and silence. Thank you for your patience. We have two additional testifiers here with me today, and once they're done, then we can.
One second. I didn't catch your name at the beginning. Did you?
Sia Her.
Sia Her. Thank you. Just want to make sure it got on the tape. And members, before we go on, I need to move the bill. I'm going to move that House File 3081 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. Please again say your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Jocelyn Anchetta. I am the co-founder of the Filipino American Women's Network and also on the board of the Philippine Center of Minnesota. I have a 20-year history of being in foundations and working with domestic abuse and immigrant refugee communities. I'm here today to just give you the tip of the iceberg on some of the issues that we're dealing with in the Filipino community. We have a couple phenomenon. One is that our community is spread out all over the state. We have, based on the last census, about 12,000 people claiming of Filipino-American descent. We know that that's an undercount. We have a lot of pen pal brides who marry men mostly in the state who are spread out. We have discovered a pocket up in Baudette, Minnesota. They call themselves out the Ladies of the North Woods. The first year we intervened or met them, there were about in the teens. The second year they were together, or we got together, there were 20. And then the following year there's over 30 now. And we're beginning to hear issues of domestic violence in these partners. And so that's one of the phenomenon in our community. The other is, I think it would help, a task force like this would help really look at common issues across the various Asian American ethnic groups and look at the commonalities and common approaches that we can do. But we also have the opportunity to address the issues in a cultural and linguistic manner because many people have different things they're dealing with. You have clan issues, you have in our community highly Catholic, and so there's the issue of divorce and marriage that people don't believe in, and also perhaps the pressure of the family. The third, I think the other thing that the task force can help is really provide us with hard data. We encounter a lot of these issues from a call from a prosecutor. It could be from a police. It could be from a neighbor. But we really don't have a way of organizing any community response when we don't have the information at hand. And this is what a task force can help do. So I'm going to stop there with my 3 points and leave it up to Lee.
Again, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Lee Veng. I'm former executive director of the Association for Advancement Among Women Minnesota. Thank you for your platform you provide today. In doing this, you demonstrate that we Asian Pacific women Minnesota are matter too. Each year, the agency that I used to work for has served more than 5,000 individual women. We experience in working with a victim of domestic abuse and violence here in Minnesota and in other states as well. For the last 5 to 10 to 15 years, things in the Hmong community has been getting worse relating to family violence and domestic abuse. 1996 to the present, family violence and domestic abuse incidents has been double or triple up. 1979, intimate partner violence that lead to family tragedies continue to increase by the days. 2009, we have received daily reports and calling for help. It has been brought us a great concerns about this family problem. Association for Advancement Among Women and Community University Clinic has been working in partner to increasing women's support group named Women Leader of Minnesota. It started with 65 women who have family-related mental health issues relating to the domestic issue and abuse here. Hmong women today and are raising large family or large number of children by themselves with a limited income. The major problem today for those women and children are related to broken family due to the high level of domestic violence and mental, and men leaving their wife for the very young girls of Southeast Asian. We need your help to pass this bill and ensure that we will have the data that should light our critical needs and culturally and linguistically accessible resource. thank you for your time, and I urge you to pass this bill, and thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a procedural question for you. I thought I might have heard you say that this is going to Health and Human Services finance. Is that correct?
Correct. That's the motion.
Mr. Chair, the Asian Pacific Council and Commission is under the jurisdiction of State Government Finance and Veterans Affairs, and if there's a fiscal responsibility, shouldn't that be going to that committee since they're the ones who do the appropriations?
This, Representative Driscoll, it's my understanding that this bill deals with Health and Human Services issues, and that's what the task force is going to be studying, and they're going to be financing the study as opposed to State Government Finance. It covers both. But that they're going to be this is dealing with issues of abuse, and that's why it's going to Health and Human Services.
Mr. Chairman, maybe if I could just clarify,
they need to go to both. Representative,
yeah, I just want to clarify that it's here for the establishment of the task force. It will go there for the funding of the research that needs to be done.
Representative Clark,
it will go there, meaning Health and Human Services, yeah, Finance.
Correct.
That's okay, correct. Mr. Chair, the only reason I ask that is because traditionally the funding for these particular entities would have come through State Government Finance and Veterans Affairs, and I'm just asking procedurally why, and I'm hearing why it's not happening. So, thank you.
And Representative Driscoll, it may still go to Health State Government Finance. Questions, Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Clark, or I don't know, maybe some of the testifiers, thank you for coming today, by the way. Just wondering if why isn't the Minnesota Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans doing this now? Are they failing to, you know, address the issues that you brought before us today?
Ms. Herr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Driscoll.
We'll take it.
I have trouble. Okay. I have trouble with his name too.
How do I pronounce your name properly?
Alphabet. No, Driscoll. You were very
Driscoll.
Close.
Driscoll. Yeah. Okay, Mr. Chair, Representative Driscoll. That's a great question. Let me just say that the reason why the council has not and is not taking up this issue of domestic abuse alone and is asking for the creation of a task force and separate funding to be couched in DHS is because domestic abuse is a very, very sensitive issue in many of our Asian communities. And if the council were to tackle this issue on its own, it would very well get caught in the internal politics of some of the ethnic communities. And so when I gave my testimony, I said this would be a legislative mandate, and in that legislative mandate, all of the power and the credibility and authority of government would come forth and would recognize that there is a problem that government wants to participate in looking for solutions and not put the Council of Color in the line of fire.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did read at least a portion of the summary of the recent audit from Auditor Nobles, and he cited one of the things he cited is they had an inadequate identification. All of the four councils that he audited had inadequate identification of the objectives of the organizations. And I'm wondering, are the issues you're bringing before us today among the issues that they have identified, or have they failed to identify them, or is it a priority of the council, or no?
Ms. Herr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drozdowski, another great question. I am new in my position as executive director, so I'm actually a year into my position. And in the time that I have been here, I have attempted to systematize many of the operations of our council. One of the things we did in developing our legislative agenda for this session was that we conducted a community survey. And the community survey showed us that one of the top four issues the community wants us to tackle is the issue of domestic abuse. One of the other issues that the community wants us to tackle is the prevalence or the availability of linguistically and culturally accessible resources. And so this piece gets at both of those. Gets at two of the four issues that the community wants us to address. And I assure you that prior to us getting here, that I engage in many conversations with various stakeholders, and they, you know, their only response to me was, thank God somebody is doing something about this. We have been crying and unheard for decades, and thank God you're here to do this. So that's my response.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing the issues forward. It sounds like they're very important issues, but my question is, why is the Asian Pacific Minnesota Council not addressing this? It sounds like they are not hearing the issues that your group went out and actively did the work. So, there seems to be, at least from the overall scope of government here, we're creating a task force with this bill to address an issue that the existing organization doesn't seem to either have an ear for or is just failing to do. That doesn't seem to be effective or efficient. And so that's kind of where I struggle. When does a task force expire? Representative Clark?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that we have it's the 2014 and the report will be coming to the Commissioner of Human Services and the Council. I want to just point out, this is the Council coming forward, bringing this, Representative Drazkowski. Exactly what you're wishing for is happening right here. The Council is being very responsive, and I think Ms. Herr also went through and explained how carefully they came to this this particular request. It's very much from the Council and with the Council, and there are, you know, I think she explained very well with a lot of vulnerability some of the difficulties of just doing it alone. So I hope people can respect that. And I think, you know, it'll be to our benefit to have this information brought forward. I really appreciate the Council's leadership in this. I think it's wonderful.
Representative Drazkowski.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Clark, I beg to differ. We're creating a new entity here. This is a brand new task force, a legislatively approved task force, and the struggle here is that, or the question that remains unanswered is, why is the Asian Pacific Minnesota Council not addressing what seems to very much verified by your research that you guys did a lot of work. Why are they not, as an organization, properly addressing this issue? That's why we have them.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, let me answer that question again. This issue was brought forward to Representative Karen Clark by me. I am the Executive Director of the Council. In the first few months of my time on board as Executive Director, I went and did a round of sit-downs with the Executive Directors of some of the largest nonprofits serving the AAPI community here in the state of Minnesota. Domestic abuse, unfunded services and programs provided to victims of domestic abuse was an issue that they brought up. And then right after the round of sittings with the executive directors of the nonprofits, I did a round of sit-downs with the commissioners of the various state agencies. And in my conversation, in my first meeting with the commissioner of DHS, she asked me what I had learned from my conversations with the nonprofits. I shared with her some of the 3 to 4 key findings. This was the one that she latched onto, and she said, I would like to meet with these women that you met with. And so we organized a meeting after that, and she and I went and sat down with a group of 40 women who were victims of domestic abuse. We had a relatively long meeting with them, and then after that she connected with me again and asked me, what would you like us to do with this situation now that we are aware of it? The fact that the Hmong American community is the largest community under the umbrella of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and it's a community that numbers close to 80,000. Domestic abuse is a huge, major issue that is breaking families apart, and that has a direct impact on other issues that we are looking at here at the state. And so I, again, answer your question in saying that this is the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans addressing a significant and critical issue in our community, and I am telling you as Executive Director, as is my responsibility in our enabling statute, I am advising you that this is an issue that would be better tackled with a legislative mandate than just for the Council to tackle on its own.
Representative Scouse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is there anything that we're aware of in law now limiting you as Executive Director and the other members of the Council from doing this report on your own without seeking a new structure, a new organization, an additional effort through other agencies? It seems to me that this is why these councils exist. So is there anything limiting your ability as a council to do exactly what you want to do in this report? Ms. Herr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, the answer is no. But I have said repeatedly that this is a very sensitive issue. When we talked with the women that we did, Commissioner Jessen and I, women very clearly stated that in talking with us and sharing their stories, that they were putting their physical safety at risk. I am telling you that there are lots of internal politics associated with certain communities, and so the council, in the best interest, in the interest of being effective and efficient, I am advising you as a representative of the Council on Asian Pacific Islanders that a legislative mandate is the best approach to tackling this issue. This issue isn't an issue that just came out of the ground yesterday. It has been going on for decades, and we have not been effective at tackling it and from a systemic approach. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for the author, and I'm wondering what research, if any, you might have done to, or it could be for Ms. Herr. Thank you so much for being here, ladies. Wondering what research you might have done and gathered from what other states with large communities that might have had similar experiences. Wondering if there isn't something to gain from not reinventing the wheel to facilitate the productivity of the commission and the task force.
Representative
Pugh.
Ms. Herr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pugh, thank you for the question. Yes, we did do some research. In addition to talking with the various stakeholders on the ground, we looked at what existing research there is out there. And in fact, the only numbers that we came across were provided by a national organization called the Asian Pacific Islander Institute for Domestic Abuse. And the numbers that they provide cover some of the groups that are under the umbrella of our council, but there is a dearth of numbers, statistics, numbers that you as policymakers would recognize as data. There is a dearth of numbers on some of our largest communities, and even with those, the numbers that were provided in the statistics provided by that national organization, the numbers are small and few. And this task force, this research that this task force would be conducting, would be unique in that it would be looking at qualitative nuances as well as gathering the numbers that could then be analyzed and synthesized and produced in a report that you would understand.
Mm-hmm. Representative Pugh.
Thank you.
Representative Pitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to look at you, said, and the witnesses for coming today. I appreciate it, and Representative Clark for bringing this forward. I know this is a huge issue, and obviously some of the things that we're talking about are things that are important to all of us, and we want to solve them. I think I do have some of the concerns of some of the other witnesses, and Representative Draskowski brought some of it forward. I'm still struggling with why the council couldn't bring this forward, because I'm looking exactly what we're asking for the task force to do, and so I've got four things. So the task force is going to research the existing system of support. They're going to look at the effectiveness of the system. They're going to look for further improvements of the system, and then they're going to provide estimates of the funds needed for the resources and programs, which seems like that would be something, a lot of that information would be available, and I don't know that there's a lot of research needed. And I guess my first question would be, we also fund an organization called the Economic Status of Women, and they do a lot of those things already, and I'm trying to figure out, is there a way that we could ask that group to do it, since that's what they're charged to do, and why we couldn't work with them. It seems like they could do at least the first three in consultation with the council, and then, you know, an estimate of the funds needed. That's something that we can do in the legislature. We can get a fiscal note on that. So I'm just wondering if there are any ways we can do this without creating yet another task force that apparently is going on indefinitely, and we don't necessarily have the cost information here.
Mr. Representative Kahn, and I would suggest, I don't know if we can do this here, but I would suggest going forward that you, after the report is done, that you sunset the task force and get that in the language of the bill.
We can do that. Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm fine with that. And I would just say, you know, there's no reason why Representative Pepin and me wouldn't want to include the council on economic status of women. But this is a work that needs to be done by people who speak the language of the folks who are we're talking about. That's a very important thing to understand, and I think some of the witnesses referred to that. I won't belabor that, but it's very different to have people from outside the culture talk to individuals and gather that information than it is to have people who can speak the same language come from the same background. And I would just say, if it's not clear, the members of the advisory task force serve with no pay. There's no pay for the advisory task force here at all. It is a voluntary task force. The only thing that cost there would probably be to help get the research done by an organization that has credibility in terms of research. It might be somebody like Wilder Institute, something like that. What we're talking about here, though, is the advisory task force is going to be made up of volunteers, whether we get someone from, I think it was great you suggested the Council of Economic Status of Women, but I think people in the community doing the research and the task force itself, you should understand there's no cost to that.
Representative Pepper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, I guess the hard part I'm having is why this can't be done without the government coming forth and setting forth a task force. If it's just volunteer, well, why can't the Council of Asian Pacific Minnesotans appoint the task force without having to come to the legislature? And then, so the second part of that question would be, Ms. Hur, you talked about the sensitivities and things like that, and that's why the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans can't do the work themselves because of, you know, maybe retaliation or things like that. And if that's the case, why then was the council doing the appointing? Because you'd think you'd have some of the same issues. And why wouldn't the governor appoint? Why is it this task force that's appointing? Because you'd think that the same issues, if there are those issues, I would think that the same repercussions would happen if you were doing the appointing.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
if you read the first line 1.9, it's the Commissioner of Human Services and the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, and I think it's been explained three or four times that the legislative mandate helps make this have the legitimacy it will need.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Clark. So, maybe walk me through the process, because usually when you have these task force, they usually say, you know, the governor will appoint three people, and the Speaker of the House will appoint three people, and the Senate will appoint three people. How, and if you could just walk me through how that's going to work, and then you mentioned that it's volunteer and no pay. Will there be per diem or any other expenses that you project are coming forward?
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pepin, you can check again with our staff here. There is the language of this requires no pay, does not allow pay for this advisory task force. There is no pay.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure which, is it Mr. Shepard? If do we need to specify that, or if we say nothing, is that what it defaults to?
Mr. Shepard. Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, because the bill does not authorize any per diem or expense reimbursement, there would be none.
Okay.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, would you mentioned that you're okay with a sunset, which always makes me more comfortable that when there's an actual...
That was an oversight. We should put it in, and I have no problem with that.
I don't know if there's time right now or if we want to wait for the next committee.
We have one more question. Mr. Shepard, if you could figure out language for that, and we have one more person I think wants to testify. Please to come to the podium. And
Mr. Chairman, I just want to indicate this is the extent of my witnesses right here.
Somebody else requested to testify. Again, please state your name for the tape, and if you can be succinct and not repeat previous testimony, it would be helpful.
No. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International, which is legal advocacy and public policy. Arner Family Centers that does shelters, transition, and permanent housing and services, and APAC, the Asian Pacific American Housing Consortium, made of trusted housing professionals and service providers. I'm a former corporate auditor of Fortune 500 companies, and I almost died but survived my assailant's attempts to kill me with a gun. I still suffer from permanent injuries and have trouble speaking. I know that the unprotected financial exploitations, I know about the unprotected financial exploitation after losing multi-millions of dollars to my abusers. I also know about the abuser's negative impact on family, relatives, parents, children, grandchildren, friends, and colleagues. So I shifted my work to systems change to improve the lives of people and efforts to end violence. I have 50 years in housing and related fields and have worked in legal advocacy and policies for 26 years. In doing court work, I also did training of advocates, and we had help from a number of former colleagues, we folks, including the judges, former Senator Knutson, who is now a judge, Sandy Keith, Senator Jane Ranum, Senator Ellen Anderson, and a number of others, and we put on even national conferences and other conferences to try and train the advocates. I founded the first Asian Pacific Islander shelter in Minnesota after experiences of sleeping in a car near a police station to stay safe back in the early 1970s. With the help of nuns who ran a private shelter, we founded our private shelter and services that runs on no government funds, and we can be more restrictive in keeping data private that wasn't available as far as being a public shelter. I was the first API doing legislation, legal advocacy, shelter and services, and helping other services and programs connected with the Minnesota Coalition of Battered Women and MNCASA that deals with sexual assault. And through the Minnesota Coalition of Battered Women, we helped with the formation of Asian Women United, the Asian Public Shelter and
Ms.
helped
Lee,
them.
Lee, can you move it along?
Yes,
and tell us what
I'll
you,
move
what
it along. So I wanted to thank and recognize Representative Clark, who was instrumental in getting us a lot of these things going as far as development, construction, and the public shelters. And I wanted to address what Representative Pippin said. Sorry if I mispronounced. But as far as the issues, back when the council was beginning, the ombudspeople were kept within the council, and since they handle court cases, there were issues as far as data privacy and the protection of the individuals and the children, which is why they separated into its own entity that has its own funding that does the ombudsman services for children and families. However, with the battered women and the issues that Representative Clark is trying to address, there's a lot of unresolved issues. Only recently have you folks put in the Safe at Home Project with the Secretary of State, but it still doesn't go far enough. So there's a lot of women we call that have been unserved, underserved, and are hiding in the systems because they don't have the protections needed. I think the task force, as far as its formation with the volunteers, because we've all done volunteers work as far as being on task forces and everything, needs to be separate from the council because of the data privacy issues, who we have, and the issues as far as batterers. Because these batterers even come to our shelters if they can find out where they are, and they cause a lot of problems, and some shelters have closed just to and reopened and so forth. So we're talking of safety issues for the people and the privacy and so forth, that the council, by housing it as a task force within the council, just won't be able to do and doesn't have the capacity and the experts that's needed. Like I mentioned, a name of some of the judicial members who might be in. So I appreciate your consideration, and I hope you support our bill. Thank you.
Representative Clark, this amendment that Mr. Shepard has prepared is it's a technical amendment, and it puts in an expiration date. Is
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a great amendment. I would urge you to adopt it.
So, members, I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 3081 that does a couple technical changes and then puts in an expiration date on the sunset date on the for the task force. Any questions about the amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The amendment's adopted. Representative Kahn.
Just a point that I would like us, not, obviously not on this bill, but in general, as we were doing some of the unsession bills, I thought that whenever we have some of these task forces that report at a certain day, we should certainly not only sunset them after the, I give them a month or something like that, because you really want them around for the report to the legislature when the legislature gets to it. But then we also need to repeal the statute so that it doesn't notice that a lot of the things we were doing are repealing things because task force expired some period of time. So if we could have some automatic language that kind of said that in general, when there's an expiration date, when there's a sunset expiration date, they all work together.
And Representative Kahn, this one goes into session law. It doesn't go into statute.
Oh, okay.
So it would go away afterwards. Any further questions? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the amendment. I think that's good. I just have a couple more maybe technical questions that perhaps we could address. I noticed it didn't say how many members on the task force, so I'm wondering if you could talk about that and if we can maybe specify it in the bill. And then just curious, how will this be staffed? Will somebody staff it, or will it just be a volunteer doing it, or will the council, Ms. Hur, maybe you'll staff it, or how will that work?
Representative Ms. Hur.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans will be there to provide high-level supervisory supervision. So we will do a certain level of staffing, if you will. The bulk of the work will be done by the entity that will be paid for through the passage of this bill. And so I'm thinking that the bulk of the work will be done by another entity. The council will be there to provide some high-level supervision, and the project will be couched under DHS.
Representative Clark,
Chairman,
as far as the number of people on the task force?
We were just conferring. I'm guessing it'll be about 10. We want to make sure that there's a it's covering kind of the expanse of the different parts of the community, but it doesn't need to be excessive.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Clark, would you be open to putting that in just so it's specified? Or
you want to do that?
Yes. Definitely.
Mr. Chairman, if that's what it takes to pass this bill, I guess that's what we'll do.
Mr. Shepherd, where would be the appropriate place to put the number?
Mr. Chair and members, I would suggest on page 1, line 10, perhaps after task force, you could say of 10 members or however many members you want.
If that's what they think they need,
Mr. Chairman, 10 is fine if that's...
So, members, on line, I'll move the amendment on line 1.10 after the word task force, insert of 10 members. Everybody understand the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Member, the motion's adopted.
Thank
Representative
you.
Clark.
I appreciate it. I just want to mention that the Assistant Commissioner Aaron Sutton Sullivan is here should you need any more
questions.
But I really appreciate it. I think the work done on this improves the bill, and I appreciate all your support.
Anybody else in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? Any further questions? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, I'm not going to do anything right now, but you know, a couple of people have mentioned kind of the problem with safety issues and privacy of, you know, the council working in this, and that's why I'm really wondering if it wouldn't work better if somebody else did the appointing of the task force, and I'm just wondering if you can consider that. He doesn't have to be here. I'm just thinking for you to consider that later, because if that's indeed a problem, this doesn't seem to help. This doesn't seem to solve the problem of that issue.
Representative Clark, Ms. Hur.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, the council would just, DHS would be the main appointing authority. The council would just provide information that would help DHS to identify who the experts are on the ground with respect to this issue.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, I'll renew my motion that House File 3081, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion passes.
Thank
the
you,
bill
Mr. Chairman, and committee members. I appreciate your help.
Next bill on the agenda is Representative Ann Zelk, House File 2970. Welcome to our committee. And I'll move that House File 2970 be referred to the placed on the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, 2970, is here at the request of the Grand Rapids City Council. It would repeal a commission in Grand Rapids called the Central School Commission. The commission has been in effect for 28 years. It's completed its work. The Grand Rapids Central School ceased to be a schoolhouse back in the early 1980s. But because of its location in the center of my community and because of its architectural significance, the city council wanted to create a commission, came to the legislature, a commission was created, and that commission met and planned for other uses for the building. And it has become a commercial retail amenity in our community. The commission has completed its work, and the city council has asked that you repeal the statute. That's the bill.
Representative Enzel, there's nothing to do with schools, there's nothing to do with education anymore in this building. It's now a commercial center, and the city council is managing it.
That is spot on correct, Mr. Chair. It ceased to be a schoolhouse in the early 1980s and became the property of the city of Grand Rapids.
Questions from the members? Anybody in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? If not, I'll renew my motion that House File 2970 be placed on the general register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The motion passes.
Appreciate it, Mr. Referred. Chairman and members. Thank you.
Best bill all session.
Hey, you haven't heard my bill yet.
I like pleasing the committee.
Representative Allen. Okay. Okay. Representative Uglum. Yeah, get a hand up. This may not be in the packet. Why don't you hand up the rest of them? 2762. We need a second here to get them hand passed out to the committee. Welcome to the committee, and I'll move that House File 2762 be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Economic Development, Finance, and Policy. And if you want to briefly describe your bill as it's being passed out here, is there any amendments in the packet? Or
thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, there's an A1 amendment that I'd like to
okay. Well,
consider
we get the packets. We'll
yep, to get that in.
So, if you want to describe your bill while it's being passed out.
Very good. Thank you again, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for hearing this bill 2762 regarding cosmetology. This is an agency bill. The goal of the bill is to simplify and remove obsolete language in the bill. It's a cleanup bill. There is one major change, and that is an increase in the board of directors, the membership there, and it was four. There were at times some quorum problems with such a small board, but there is no fiscal impact on this bill. I have Gina Strauss, Executive Director of the Cosmetology Board, here to answer any specific questions. And Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Gina.
And Representative Uglum, is there any the amendment? I'll move the A1 amendment. And what is that doing? How is that changing the bill?
The A1 amendment is technical in nature.
It's the wrong
rule. Yeah, it's a rulemaking deal.
Which is why it brings it here. Okay. Yep. Members, I'll move the A1 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The amendment's adopted. I guess, will any questions of the testifier or this author? If not, anybody in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? Seeing silence and seeing no one rushing to testify, I'll renew my motion that House File 2762, as amended, be re-referred to the to the Jobs, Economic Development, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. The bill is re-referred. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
While we're waiting for President Allen, we'll take up House File 3041, and Mr. Chair, I'll move that House File 3041 be recommended to be re-referred to taxes. And members, this is part of our ongoing saga of unsession bills. This is a portion of the revenue unsession bill, and I'll have a testifier here, and I forgot her name, but anyway, to explain what this does. This is just minor technical pieces.
Thank you. If you could please identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Terry Steenblack, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes at the Department of Revenue. And as Representative Nelson mentioned, this is part of the unsession bill. And what we are here asking for today is some changes to the debt collection statute to remove outdated information and some technical jargon. Back in 1994, the Debt Collection Act was passed and Minnesota Statute 16D was created. And this was the language that established a centralized collection process. State agencies were required to refer their debts to one agency, and that agency was the Department of Revenue. Since 1994, the collection of other agency debt has evolved, and language used in 16D has become outdated or contains technical jargon. This bill would make it clear that we are providing collection service to referring agencies. It would replace the terminology of a debt qualification plan, which is simply an agreement between our agency and the agency referring their debt, replaces that word with the word agreement. It removes references to commissioners, which today includes both the Commissioner of Revenue and the Commissioner of MMB. When we go out and locate private collection agencies who do debt collection for us, we currently only do that with the Department of Revenue. So it's removing both commissioners and clarifying that it's the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue. This language also aligns language where it makes sense. For example, there's notification language under the fee section. We are simply asking for the notification language to be moved from the fee section to the notification section. And then finally, it removes the use of the word enterprise. Back in 1994, when this started, there were two units within the Department of Revenue. One collected tax debt and the other collected other agency debt. And so that was removed years ago, and now it is just one unit collecting both tax and non-tax debt. So we are asking for the removal of the word enterprise. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, Chair Nelson.
I'll renew my motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to speak on this, for or against this bill? Oh, okay. Representative Sanders.
Just really quick, Mr. Chair. What was the, where is this bill referred to?
I believe it was taxes.
Taxes.
Yeah. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to speak for or against this bill? Okay. Seeing no audience or member questions, Chair Nelson renews his motion that House File 3041 be referred to taxes. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Bill is referred. Thank you.
Do we have testifiers here for Representative Allen's bill? She's up in another committee. I'm going to move House File 3043 to be placed on the general register. And welcome to our committee, Mr. Edwards. If you please state your name for the tape, and if you want to explain what this bill does and why it's important.
Chairman Nelson, members of the committee, my name is Jamie Edwards, and I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. Thank you, Miigwech, for allowing me to testify today on behalf of House File 3043. Under current state law, Section 306.02, cemetery associations created by tribal governments are excluded from the list of entities that are recognized and allowed under statute to receive a transfer of cemetery lands. In turn, this limits the ability of local units of government, which may want to transfer responsibility and control of maintaining certain cemetery lands on or near Indian reservations across the state over to tribal governments. In 2002, the Grand Portage Band of Chippewa passed a bill to address this type of cemetery land issue with the support of Cook County. That bill was very specific to the Grand Portage Band and a certain parcel of cemetery land in Cook County. Rather than change the law to recognize tribal cemetery associations, that law simply carved out a limited exception affecting only that parcel. In the Mille Lacs area, specifically Capio Township, we're dealing with a similar issue in which the township desires to transfer a cemetery to the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe but cannot because currently our state statute doesn't recognize tribal cemetery associations. After discussions with the leadership of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, it was decided that a better and more efficient approach would be to correct the problem in a way that benefits all tribes in the state who might be dealing with a similar issue now and into the future. Included in your packet, I believe, is a signed copy of a resolution that was adopted by the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council supporting the amended legislation. I believe there's an amendment, delete all amendment, that also was made available for committee members.
And members, in your packet, there's a DE1 amendment, and what Mr. Edwards said is that instead of carving out an exception just for the Capio Township, it makes it, it adds the cemetery association and the Indian tribes as part of that, and that's what the amendment does, and so that this would have to come back for every single case that would come before us in the future.
Correct. So again, in the spirit of good government-to-government relations, House File 3043, again, would allow the recognition and inclusion of cemetery associations created under tribal law by adding them to a list of entities which can receive a transfer of cemetery land. It's important to know that this bill creates no mandates, and these types of land transfers are always voluntary. So again, thank you for your time, members of the committee and Chairman Nelson.
And members, I'll move the DE1 amendment to put the bill the way the author wants it. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. The amendment's adopted. To the overall bill, any questions of the testifier? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a procedural question. My assumption is that those who might, and again, I don't know the specifics of this, but my hunch is that there may be members of the tribe that have been buried in that or interned in that cemetery. Would there have been non-tribal members interned in that cemetery as well?
I think in this particular parcel that kind of brought us to this point, I believe the majority are of the members, and this is part of the reason why the township passed a referendum maybe some 10 years ago, but we were not able to receive that land under current state law. But in most instances, the parcels of cemetery land that we would be talking about have primarily just tribal members buried in them. So,
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that all persons who have lost loved ones, regardless of their nation of origin, would be allowed to remain interned there, or if in anticipation that there was a purchase for the loss of a loved one, that those would be honored if there was a change of control over this as well.
Yes, Representative
O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, I'm sorry. Chairman Nelson. Just from a cultural standpoint, I mean, that's not something we do is unearth remains. So,
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there happened to have been or were, I just wanted to make sure that all persons, loved ones, regardless of their national origin, are honored.
Correct. correct.
And have respected.
Yeah, this is really really is a way of, you know, townships and other entities sometimes are financially incapable of maintaining what they have the responsibility to maintain. So some of that responsibility in these cases would be passed on to tribal governments. And we've been maintaining that parcel of land for some time, but I think the Catheel Township and the township clerk really was available and testified when we had the bill up in the Senate, and they're supportive, of course, of the effort.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier.
Thank you. Any further questions of members? Anybody else in the audience that needs to speak for or against this bill? Members, I've been told that there's a member here from the townships if they have any questions, but they're okay with this. But if you need to ask questions, there's somebody here from the townships association. If not, no further questions. Nobody rushing to the microphone. I'll renew my motion that House File 3043, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. The bill's re-referred. Thank you, Mr. Edwards, and thank you, members. And members, seeing as how we got through our agenda for today, we will not be having to meet tonight. I'm sure everyone's disappointed about that. Anyway, our next meeting is Friday morning at 9 a.m., and we have an aggressive agenda that we need to get through, and there may be more stuff added to that, depending on re-referrals that come to us, dealing with deadlines between now and Friday morning. So, members, hopefully we can get in and put our nose to the grindstone and get things done quickly and get out of there and enjoy the rest of our weekend. With that, members, we're adjourned.